on this date, June 19th, this date marks the Juneteenth National Freedom Day. Juneteenth, the oldest nationally celebrated commemoration of the ending of slavery in the United States. Galveston, Texas, 1865. Union Major General Gordon Granger arrived in town, read General Order Number 3 to the people of Galveston. Quote, "The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with the proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free, and this involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between the employer and hired labor. The freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military post. I mean, I guess that's gathered at military post, and that they will not be supported in idleness, either there or elsewhere." That's a hell of an order to give to some. Wait a minute. You know, I got to tell you, I always talk about reading with the third eye and listening with the third ear. Y'all's free, but don't y'all be idle. You're free, but you can't do this and you can't do that. Anyway, it is interesting that we start with that, as we always do every morning. But I do have in studio with me, and I'm really honored, and that is our historian, C.R. Gibbs, author, lecturer. He's devoted over two decades of illuminating the rich contributions of African Americans to our society and our culture, lectures, exhibits, films, author of several books. One, very interesting, The Friends of Frederick Douglass. I mention that because today they're going to unveil Frederick Douglass's statue. Black Inventors, Black Explorers. I have that in my library at home. Oh, okay. Yes, I do. And I also have, he's the co-author of Black Georgetown Remembered, and an expert on the Black Civil War units. And thank you so much for taking the time to come in studio. And I really, I wanted you in studio to introduce you to this audience. But what really caught my attention was this, it was the fact that there's some unknown secrets or some facts about Juneteenth.
Yes.
That we didn't know about. So when C.R. Gibbs says that, look, there's something out there y'all don't know about, I really wanted you to come in because a lot of people don't know about Juneteenth, but a lot of people do. And in Houston, throughout Texas, there'll be celebrations, picnics, and that type of thing. And I certainly want to invite folks from the Texas and other areas to call in.
Certainly.
So where do you want to start with this history, Doctor?
Well, I think the first thing I'd like to do
is
to begin with the way that Juneteenth resonates in our consciousness in a way that...
All right, I'm going to take this adjusted. There you go. Go ahead.
Juneteenth resonates in our consciousness in a way few other holidays and holy days do. I mean, it was the title of Ralph Ellison's last novel, his posthumous novel. It became an obsession with him. We're talking about 2,000 pages that he wrote, and then his executors whittled it down to about 300 or so. We know that as the spirits were working, Juneteenth, 1968, the Solidarity Parade here in Washington. It had originally been planned for the for May 30th, but as the ancestors would have it, in the wake of Dr. King's assassination, Mrs. King does something heroic. She drives herself to come to D.C. in the midst of her grief, and they have a major march, Juneteenth, 1968, right here. 50,000 people show up. And again, it's perhaps better known as the Solidarity March. This is an adjunct to the Poor People's Campaign and Resurrection City.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we also have to look at the fact that in terms of looking at Juneteenth, if all you do is focus on a holiday, you've missed the subtext, the text, and the pretext. Because it embodies a past, it embodies a presence, and it embodies a purpose. We, for example, know that unlike the stories, the wonderful stories that circulate, the Juneteenth mythology, that someone was killed on the way, a messenger, or that they didn't hear of it. None of that's true. None of that's true. They had newspapers. There was a telegraph line between New Orleans and Austin in 1862. The telegraph first appeared in Texas in 1854, not to mention little things like newspapers. But what made Texas different was from its inception, this was going to be the last great bastion of slavery in the United States. Texas's enslaved population actually grew during the war, when you would have expected the reverse to be true. As Union troops climbed over the western states, coming relentlessly west.
Now, western states are Kansas. I mean, when you start talking about western states, a lot of people, I just want clarification.
Mm-hmm, sure.
We're not talking California and that, are we?
No,
we're talking at the west of the Mississippi.
We're talking essentially the Midwest, if you will.
Right.
The largest slave owner, Elijah Worthington, in Arkansas, drove his black people into Texas thinking that they were going to be safe. Perry Downs, the brother of Frederick Douglass, tells the story that when he heard his master talking, and he found himself enslaved in Texas near the end of the Civil War, he heard his master say, he had run his black folk into Texas, he would run them into Cuba if necessary. And it was then and there that Perry Downs, Frederick Douglass's brother, resolved that he would never go with his master anywhere on water. And we sometimes forget that this idea of black folk in Texas and slavery extended itself outside of the United States. We have in Brazil folk that are called confederados. These are the lineal descendants of unreconstructed Confederates that intended to bring slavery and the Confederacy to Cuba and Brazil, places where it did not exist. Senator Charles Sumner, the senator, did a hearing on this. We will never know how many of our ancestors were taken against their will to Cuba and Brazil, but there are colonies that proudly acknowledge their Confederate heritage in Brazil today. Some of them even have a presence on the web. It's a reminder, too, that—
And these are former Confederates?
These are the descendants of Confederates who left the United States—
After the Civil War?
After the Civil War, as they saw everything fold up.
All right, okay.
At this point, I mean, people forget that in Appomattox— Now, that was Lee's army. That was the Army of Northern Virginia.
Right.
There was still Bennett Johnston's army that would surrender a few days later. And Kirby Smith took his army and crossed into Mexico rather than surrender.
All right.
We forget all of this is going on, and that black people against the fabric of slavery. In 1845, we have to understand that Texas is the only state to come into the Union— already had a flag, already was a republic, already sending ambassadors here to Washington, D.C. As Senator Mansfield said in 1845, our policy and practice is the maintenance of slavery. Well, against these odds, it's no wonder that, and their resolve, unremitting resolve, that they would leave the United States if they couldn't have black folk. They would leave the United States, no less than Sam Houston, who many people would consider the great granddaddy, if not the daddy of Texas, finds himself essentially shoved into obscurity because he frees his slaves, actually, September 22nd, 1862. He says, this is the preliminary emancipation. I'm a Unionist. I do not believe that Texas should leave the Union. And because of this secession fever, he is relegated to a corner of Texas
and
history.
And he's actually going against many of those who fought with Sam Houston prior to the Civil War, the Davy Crockett's, the Jim Bowie's. These folks came from slaveholding states.
And it was determined. I mean, when we look at the whole thing around the Battle of the Alamo.
And
Mexico had already outlawed slavery. People need to understand that Texas was part of Mexico longer than it's been part of the United States.
Right.
They come out of a political entity that was irreducibly against enslavement.
Right.
One of the worst portrayals in history is that of General Santa Anna. This is the strutting peacock in those Alamo movies, when in fact he was against enslavement. He had no slaves. President Polk had 50. I mean, you know, when we look at the Alamo, we understand that this was ultimately a battle against those who favored enslavement and those who wanted to get rid of it. And we now believe that perhaps some of the soldiers in the Mexican army at the time may have been Afro-Mexicanos, because we know that another 200,000 Africans were brought into Mexico in the colonial period, between the 1500s and the 1800s. Some of this is the hidden story, that there were places on the Underground Railroad. It didn't just go to Canada. It went into Mexico for that window of opportunity. But what happened for many of the black folks that only went as far as the Louisiana-Texas border is that, despite the idea of the president of Mexico, Vicente Guerrero, who would ultimately be assassinated in 1831, they made him sign a document rescinding freedom in the province of Texas. Mm. You know, so black folk who in Texas, in some respects, those who have been there the longest, were enslaved, gained their freedom, and then lost it.
And then lost it.
And then lost it. This is some of the hidden story behind Juneteenth. It was, as great as it sounds, it wasn't that somebody got lost on the way or knocked off. Texas would not, had to be forced to free its enslaved population, which at the time was more than 200,000 black people.
So fast forward us then, that's the history. Mm-hmm. So fast forward us then to the announcement by the Major General.
General Granger lands.
Granger, yes.
General Gordon Granger lands, and from the Osterman Building at the corner of 22nd and Strand, announces General Order Number 3.
Right.
It would be great if people also saw the other orders, some of the other orders he issued in the next 48 hours.
Such as?
It was lawless. He tells the Union forces to watch out for Jayhawkers, Redlegs.
What's a Jayhawker?
Jayhawker. This is a lawless person who is for the Confederacy and is willing to resort to murder, lynching, rape, and torture.
What's a Redleg?
A Redleg, same person.
All right.
But it's just that in the case of these guys came from Kansas and they often wore Redlegs over their trousers. Banditti and people who do not respect the law. This is the fabric of society that black people in Texas are initially up against. And yet, in an amazing and eternally inspiring display of faith in God, they decide to have their freedom celebrations. There's a place in Galveston called Reedy Chapel, A-M-E. And Reedy, some people call it the home of Juneteenth, because they've been having one of the oldest Juneteenth celebrations in the state. We understand that these freedom celebrations, Joe, were acts of defiance. They were demonstrations of liberation and faith, because the government, at first, in early Juneteenth celebrations, city fathers did not want them in their communities. They pushed them on the margins of town. Then by the 1870s, 1880s, what are black folk doing? They're buying land. They're establishing what are called emancipation parks, where they're going to have it. One of the most treasured things I have in my lecture on the secret history of Juneteenth is a poster which invites all the colored citizens of Austin and Travis County to come to our Emancipation Park, which is owned and controlled by colored folk. And then the next line is, we especially invite all the old ex-slaves, because our ancestors understood that there is nothing like eyewitness testimony. Give it to the children by the folks who went through it, by the ancestors.
And were there, as like you're lecturing us today, you're providing, did these ex-slaves lecture? Did they have programs? I mean, what was their role?
Their role was to act in the tradition of griots, jegnas, and jelly mooses. That is to say, they were
jelly mooses.
Jelly mooses, that's another term, from Eastern Africa. But these are all the same, whether you use the French term griot or jegna, or jelly moussa. These are all oral historians, and it is a reach and a connection.
Like griot.
Okay. From a traditional African society all the way to the shores of Texas. And their mission was to tell the children the story so that they wouldn't get it wrong, so that they had heard it from someone who had been there,
lived through it.
As the Civil War soldiers would say, who had seen the elephant. And so this is why it was held so close. I gave you an ad.
I'm going to do that, this. Hold on a second. Stop. Sure. Yeah, let's stop right there, because I was just going to stop and ask you. You were reading my mind.
All right.
You gave. I have here a copy, and this is from what year
It's on the side there.
Tell me what is that?
Sure. This is the Dallas Express, June 17th. 1919.
And it is, listen to this, a headline. This is an ad. Dress up for Juneteenth at the Savings Store.
Oh!
Lovely dresses. What are we looking at? Special shoe value. I'm just
$4, four and change.
$4.95.
Yeah, you get yourself some Juneteenth celebrating shoes.
Black and buckled pumps. $5. Oxford, kids Oxford,
yes.
$4.95, and black kids, old ladies, comfort, I guess it's a shoe, $2. Anyway, hold on. C.R. Gibbs is with us, and his lecture, which we're getting an opportunity to hear, and that is the secret history of Juneteenth. And that's what caught my attention. You think you know everything there is about a subject. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's just the peripheral. It's just the surface. And here we're going to really get deep into it. Now, got a lot of folks from Texas that listen to us on Sirius XM here on the Urban View. And feel free, no matter where you are, maybe you've celebrated Juneteenth, maybe you've had a question about it, feel free to give us your own stories. Give us a call, 1-866-801-8255. I'll tell you something else I'm thinking about, Dr. Gibbs, and that is, you know, people have all kinds of traditions, and they're different depending on where you are. If you're in Houston or Dallas, you might be different than Austin. And some of these folks probably have participated in these traditions and don't even know the origin. And I've got a feeling you do. So we'll talk about that. And I'll give you a chance to ask any questions. So here's the phone number, and lines are open, 1-866-801-8255.
Speak with Madison right now. Call 866-801-8255.
And we're talking, as you can tell, sometimes the best conversations take place during the break. But my guest is historian C.R. Gibbs and author of several books, including The Friends of Frederick Douglass. And he was just telling us about Frederick Douglass's brother and his trek to Texas, Black Inventors and Black Explorers. Great book. I mean, if you don't have that one, let me tell you, you should run out and get it. And Black Georgetown Remembered. You said something during the break, and I do want to go to calls. You said something during the break that, we read our historical facts, and I pointed out, I think, that it was one of the oldest national, it says here definitively, it is the oldest nationally celebrated commemoration of the ending of slavery. And you pointed out that that's not true.
No, that's not true.
That's not accurate.
It's not accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand, how people
sure,
feel,
right history in that,
But, think about it. I mean, in April 16th, 1862, you had D.C. Emancipation. June 19th, 1862, the Western territories were freed by Lincoln's proclamation. So you did have freedom celebrations. We know that there were attempted freedom celebrations. September of 1862, coincident with the writing and signing of Lincoln's preliminary emancipation. So there are other black folk, to tell the truth, celebrated whenever and wherever they could. And if they could celebrate their freedom several times a year, they did. And even before freedom was achieved in any large measure in the United States, there were churches in the churches in the North that celebrated West Indian emancipation.
And we're going to adjust your headphones. He just needs them on. He's got his left ear on the right and his right ear on the left. That's all right. And I was trying to get...
Sorry about that, bro. No.
Anyhow, God. Guys, excuse me. Let me do this. Anyway, Madison with you. C.R. Gibbs is with us. And I'm going to take... let's go to a phone. First time caller John from Texas. Hallelujah. Hi, how are you?
So, got a story about Juneteenth. My grandfather told me.
Can you hear the caller?
Hey, Jeff.
Yes, go ahead. I'll transfer it.
Nigga.
Oh, man. See, let me tell you. You see what we run into. So I've got this guy who just called in from, says he's from Texas, and he goes, nigga. Oh. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's live radio.
Well, you know, we have, and it's a reminder to us that...
Yes, it reminds us
what? It reminds us of how far yet we have to go and of the continuing battle. If we focus just on the celebratory aspects of Juneteenth, we are oblivious to the fact that we still have a battle that was continuing after Juneteenth. We have Smith versus Allwright. We have Sweat versus Painter. All of these are extremely...
There you go.
All of these are extremely important in the history of civil rights in Texas, and Juneteenth should never obscure the once and continuing struggle for justice and equality that is still going on in the Lone Star State.
Let's talk about these ads that you gave us and what were the significance of these.
Sure. Juneteenth was not about partying without a purpose.
Okay.
A party
with a purpose.
Yes,
all right,
yes.
Go ahead.
We have from the Texas Dry Goods Company. This is an ad from the Dallas Express, which I believe was an African-American newspaper. But it says is dress up for Juneteenth at the Savings Store. You can get your suit. You can get your shoes on Juneteenth. This was a day that was sacred. And one of the things about Juneteenth being celebrated, not only at the Black Emancipation Grounds, but also in the churches. I mentioned Reedy Chapel, AME at Galveston. Our ancestors understood that it really wasn't about Lincoln, even about the forces of the Union Army, as much as it was the power of the Creator. That, in other words, Lincoln and Granger were instruments in the hands of the master craftsman. That their freedom was a gift not from the stroke of a pen, but from the blessings of the Almighty. Which is why, when we look at the whole history of freedom celebrations, the church is an immutable part of that.
Should Juneteenth be a national holiday? And then I guess I should ask the question, is it a state holiday in Texas?
It
officially.
It is official state holiday. The governor, I believe, signed it in 1979, so that the first official observance was in 1980. What I like people to do is, and again, along with our ancestors, is anytime you have an opportunity to party, go right ahead. But just try to remember, for example, we're next door to Maryland in the District of Columbia. November 1st, 1864 is a day. That's Emancipation Day in Maryland. And many people don't know when Black folk in Maryland got their freedom. It wasn't listed in the Emancipation Proclamation. And we have a place on the Eastern Shore. People who go to the beaches go through Trap, Maryland, and don't know that that is the seat of one of the oldest Black Maryland Emancipation Day celebrations in the state, and definitely the oldest one on the Eastern Shore.
It's off, and I must say, I didn't know about it. You get very little information in the papers about it. It certainly isn't listed as a tourist attraction in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
And yet the local and city governments miss out on what we call cultural tourism,
right.
When they fail to grasp that fact. And so what's left is these wonderful local celebrations. Laurel, Maryland has an Emancipation Park. I mean, you know, the celebration I was just describing on the eastern shore of Maryland is also known as Uncle Nace's Day, named after a brother who fought in the Civil War. So we have, this is the history. And when you consider that these freedom festivals, again, were acts of resistance against state and local and sometimes federal governments that did not want them to commemorate anything, we ought to hold them that much more closer.
Let me go to Pat, who's calling from Texas. First-time caller, you're on with us. C.R. Gibbs.
Hi, how are you both?
Okay.
Hi, Pat.
That's great. I'm calling from Houston, and we are getting ready to celebrate. Well, matter of fact, we've been celebrating Juneteenth all month. And we had a big parade. I'm with the Emancipation Park here in Houston. We had a big parade on Saturday. And at that parade, we had some people there who were passing out petitions trying to make Juneteenth a national holiday. And I was just wondering, had you heard anything, Dr. Gibbs especially, have you heard anything about that?
Yes, there is a continuing move led by Reverend Myers and others to work on people to make Juneteenth a national holiday.
Yeah, yes, he has been on our show several times, and he has very diligently petitioned the White House to get them to, in fact, recognize it. And I know that Congressman Conyers has worked with him. I haven't talked with Myers, but, you know, that's why I asked Dr. Gibbs the question, Pat. You know, it really takes quite an effort. I mean, you've got to educate the country about it.
Well, second of all, you got to actually educate these Texans, because, you know, they're all I'm here to tell you, I'm not from Texas, but I've been here a while, and I'm enjoying myself and learning.
Yeah.
And was really surprised. I didn't know anything about Juneteenth until I came to Texas.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. But that doesn't surprise you, does it, Dr. Gibbs?
No, we have. Yeah. One of the things that we see in the celebration.
And thank you, Pat. Well, hold on, Pat. Don't go anywhere. Go ahead.
Yeah, is that Texans have been on the case, adopted Texans and native-born Texans. One of the reasons for Juneteenth's rapid spread outside the borders of Texas is that wherever black Texans went, they took Juneteenth with them. And so we see this going on. One of the interesting currents along with this is in the old days, they took great care to make strawberry soda at Juneteenth celebrations.
Hello?
Strawberry soda was red for the blood shed.
Really?
Yeah. Now, since the 1930s, they've adopted Big Red soda.
No.
And Big Red is a Southern concoction, a confection,
right,
if you
right.
will. Some people claim it has the taste of bubble gum. I spoke at a certain corporate Juneteenth celebration a few years ago. Joe, they brought in cases. They said they could not have a legitimate Juneteenth party without Big Red soda.
Now, it sounds, I mean, we're kind of laughing and smiling, but like you said, there's a story behind it.
Yes, yes.
And that is far more serious than just having red soda.
Right, right. That strawberry soda initially meant the bloodshed. And in Texas, which was one of the leading states in terms of lynching, there was every reason to acknowledge that suffering.
Let me talk with Maurice, and I got a couple of minutes from Kansas. And Maurice is a first-time caller.
Hallelujah.
You're on with C.R. Gibbs. Hi. Are you there, Maurice? All right, Maurice dropped. In the last 2 minutes that we have, and I thank you so much. Let's fast forward to where we are, 2013, and the message that you would want us to understand. I mean, you know, party with the cause, but I mean, how serious should we take this? Why is this important? The message you would leave with this audience.
The message I would leave with this audience about Juneteenth is that this is ours. This is ours. This is an immutable, indigenous, autochthonous celebration of joy and freedom. But it is also a reminder, when the elders dictated their stories to the kids in the old days, it was not simply to entertain them. It was to inspire them for the battles yet to come. And again, I mentioned Smith versus all white, the white primaries, to fight the Texas white primaries, Sweat versus Painter to knock down the Jim Crow against the educational system. So Juneteenth reminds us that we must study the past. It is an excellent example of the principle of Sankofa in order to move forward and confront the challenges of the future.
Your books are available online, a website. Let me ask for the website. Let's get that out the way.
Sure.
First,
for folks please. Who want to get in touch with me, it's portofharlem.net/C. Gibbs.
Portofharlem.net/C. Gibbs. And that's C. Gibbs, G-I-B-B-S.
That's
all right.
Correct.
And we'll put it on the Facebook and get it up. I so appreciate you coming in. I just wanted people to understand the secret history of Juneteenth and take it beyond the celebration, which we all, and I did want to ask the young lady from Dallas how they were going to celebrate it, because I should end with one final question for you. Do they celebrate it differently in different parts of Texas? Do Austin celebrate it different than they do in Galveston? Galveston is where the order was read, and I'm just wondering if there's a difference in how different parts of Texas celebrates Juneteenth.
Well, I would think that while there may be regional differences, the same way there are regional differences in terms of in the black community celebrating freedom based on when it came and what kind of foods and so forth.
Uh-huh.
The thing to keep in mind is the just like this description from the Fort Worth Gazette, it was a large barbecue. People had good time. And they came in vast numbers to celebrate their freedom.
All right. Dr. Gibbs, thank you for coming.
Thank you,
Jim. I so appreciate it. Coming up, the Secretary of HUD is going to be with us. I assume we're on target with him. All right. Thumbs up on that. We'll take a break. It is a major announcement that we have. We'll continue here on Urban View.